Find more State House coverage at sdpb.org.
Good morning. We'll call this meeting of House Judiciary to order and ask our secretary to please take the roll.
Representative Ingalls. Representative Feinstein.
Here.
Representative Gibson.
Here.
Representative Gosch. Representative Hamill.
Here.
Representative Hoffman.
Here.
Representative Killer.
Here.
Representative Lust.
Here.
Representative Mosher.
Here.
Representative Schleckaway.
Here.
Representative Turbeville. Representative Hunt.
Here.
Representative Cutler.
Here.
Madam Chair, 11 of 13 are present.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. We do have a quorum present, and I do apologize for making the committee and everyone else wait on me. This time of year, things get kind of busy in other committees, and I actually was tied up in the tax committee. So thank you for your patience. The chair seeks approval of the prior minutes.
So moved. Second.
Moved by Turbeville, seconded by Hunt. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Our minutes are approved. Excuse me. I think by the time we finish session, I think there are going to be a lot of people who don't have much of a voice left, given the way it's going. We will begin with Senate Bill 74, but I do want to say for anyone who's listening, there had been some requests of out-of-town testimony, and those people were not able to be here. However, Senator Abdallah wishes to move forward. It is his bill, so we will move forward with Senate Bill 74. Senate Bill 74, which is an act to direct the Office of the Attorney General to study the creation of a state medical examiner system and to declare an emergency. And with that, good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. Senate Bill 74 is without a doubt the best bill I've had in several years. It's a bill to direct the Office of the Attorney General to study the creation of a statewide medical examiner system and declare an emergency. Originally, this bill had a $15,000 cost for the study. But because it's so important to the counties and the state, the Attorney General has agreed to pay one-third the commission of, or the Association of County Commissioners has agreed to pay one-third, and Minnehaha County has agreed to pay a third, so there is no cost in this study. And what it does is the purpose is to study the need for a statewide medical examiner. Presently, we have pathologists in Sioux Falls as the county coroner and pathologists in Rapid City, I believe, is the county coroner. Other than that, in the 66 counties in the state, we have coroners from every walk of life. We have funeral home directors, deputy sheriffs, just about any profession you can imagine as a coroner. Up until recent years, the coroner used to be elected in the county. And the county commissioners decided that they would just appoint a coroner. The purpose of a statewide medical examiner is, number one, to provide uniformity, the preservation of evidence at the scene where there's an unnatural death. Right now, like I said, with the 66 counties, excluding the two, Pennington and Minnehaha, you could come up with 64 different versions of a death, unnatural death investigation. Evidence can be destroyed. Procedures would be done differently. And if we had a statewide medical examiner, they could have whatever you want to call them, deputies or assistant examiners throughout the state under the direction of a statewide medical examiner. Most of the coroners now, with exception probably of two or three, are not qualified to investigate deaths or to preserve evidence. That's basically subject of the bill, Madam Chair, and I'd be glad to answer any questions. I think this is a great bill. I think it would be a great service to the state, and we could have, like I said, uniformity in unnatural death investigations and the preservation of evidence. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Abdallah. And we'll hold questions until we're through proponent and opponent testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 74?
Good morning. My name is Bob Miller, and I'm the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Funeral Directors. Senator Abdallah asked me to remind the committee of the training in mortuary science. A graduate of mortuary science, a funeral director, has had no training to determine the cause of death. Only medical examiners can do that. Our funeral directors are not trained or prepared to determine cause of death. Therefore, we are in support of the study that's in front of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 74.
Good morning, Chairman Cutler, committee members. Stacey Eggert, Executive Director for the South Dakota Sheriff's Association. We just want to offer our support to this bill. I also work as a deputy sheriff in Minnehaha County, and I can tell you what an asset it has been to have Dr. Randall there. Having that person who has that experience, when you are on scene and you have questions, you're able to call up that individual, that doctor, one of his deputy coroners, and they can ask you the questions and have you look at the things that you need to be looking for, maybe if you haven't been to a scene like that before. So we want to encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 74.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair.
You too, huh?
Yes, ma'am. My name is Lauren Pankratz. I'm the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Association of County Commissioners, and we are here today in support of Senate Bill 74. As Senator Abdallah indicated, originally this bill had an appropriation, and that I think it caused some consternation early on, and so consequently that was removed. And so the way that the, I guess, funding, if you will, that will take place to allow the study to be done is that the agencies and organizations such as the Association of County Commissioners, the Attorney General's Office, the Funeral Home Directors, Minnehaha County in particular, will absorb the costs of whatever the cost might be in order to bring people in or to travel, whatever that might be. So that's the reason that the appropriation was removed. Dr. Randall had hoped to be able to be here today and unfortunately was not able to make it. And I would say that and he has he's been the Minnehaha County Coroner for, I'm not exactly sure how long, but a number of years. And he's also a forensic pathologist. And again, as indicated, we do not have many of those. Over the course of time, I think we've had maybe two or three. I believe there's one currently in Rapid City. It's been 26 years since I got out of law enforcement, and so it would have been prior to that time that I attended my last autopsy, and I don't mind telling you I don't miss that. But I think that the whole process that we want to be able to look at, again, is what was indicated from Senator Abdallah, is to be able to see if there is an umbrella organization that we can create to provide that expertise across the state in a uniform way. And so we're here in support, and we're prepared to answer any questions.
Thank you. Other proponent testimony for Senate Bill 74.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Scott Swear on behalf of the Attorney General this morning. We also think that this is an incredibly important study, and I think the way that the various stakeholders have come together to pay for the study shows that we do think this is a vital service that needs to be done. We need uniformity in our state medical examiner system. Obviously, we don't know what the study is going to show. That's why we're going to have the study. But we think that the bill, as far as the stakeholders that are going to be brought together, is very good. It's a very good topic that needs to be studied, and it's not something that the Attorney General believes is discretionary. We really feel that this is something that needs to be done, and it needs to be done quickly, and we have the folks on board to begin. the study. So the Attorney General would ask your favorable consideration of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 74. Seeing none, is there any opponent testimony? Seeing none, we'll close to proponent and opponent testimony and open to questions of the committee. Representative Lust.
I have a question for Senator Abdallah.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Abdallah, I guess I'm a bit confused. Is there anything that would prevent the Attorney General from doing this study right now?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lust, that's a good question, but I can't answer it. That would be a legal question, and I can't answer it.
Maybe.
This came as a request from Dr. Randall and the Minnehaha County Commission and others around the state, and I just agreed to sponsor it.
Okay.
Follow-up, Representative Lust.
Maybe I could ask Mr. Swear that same question.
Mr. Swear.
If I may. No. We could go ahead and do it if we wanted to. I think obviously the bill was commenced with the appropriation in it. We think it's important that we think it's something that the legislature should be taking a close look at. We think the legislation is something that it shows the legislature is taking this issue seriously. And by having a legislative mandate like this, moving the bill forward, we think it's a good sign from the legislature that they realize the potential dire circumstances that we're going to be in here pretty soon. Again, there's nothing that would preclude us from getting the group together. We just think this is a better, more formal way in which to do it.
Mr. Swear, I'll impose a question on you at this point, too.
I wasn't even going to testify on this bill. But
no, aren't you glad you did?
No, I'm really not.
The bill says the Office of the Attorney General shall conduct a study, and not to nitpick because I think it's a great idea, but I'm uncomfortable with the idea that we have a bill in which the legislature is telling the Attorney General's office what they shall do. Since I think my last check, you are a different branch of government. I just wonder if you're comfortable with that language.
Well, I'm going to end up doing the work on the thing, so I guess, yeah, I have to say I'm comfortable with it. But no, we're comfortable with it. We're fine with the mandate because the study is going to be done. So whether it's mandatory or permissive, we don't have an objection, but we are fine with the mandatory language.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, can I just add
Senator Abdallah.
That is part of the purpose of the bill, to mandate them. And it's a friendly mandate because the Attorney General has agreed, and all the parties have agreed, and that's why we did away with the appropriations, because the money is there, and everybody that's going to benefit from this study are paying their share.
Thank you.
And with all due respect, Representative Cutler, the legislature is always telling the Attorney General's office what to do. So we are it's nothing new for us, and we gladly accept this charge.
Thank you. Representative Hamill.
I don't want to get out ahead of the study, Madam Chair, but my guess is that the sponsors already have a good idea about how many of these systems are in place in other states. Can you just give me a glimpse of that?
Mr. Sawyer.
We actually were fortunate that last summer we had one of our fine legal interns do some background research on this area. So we will not be starting from scratch in terms of materials for the committee and the task force to look at. However, I can say that there is no decision that has been made as to, number one, if we're going to have a system or anything like that. But we do have the information that we started to put together that we feel comfortable with moving forward pretty quickly. Does that answer your question, Representative Hamill?
Follow up, Madam Chair.
follow-up?
I wasn't suggesting that you were doing this to allow you to confirm what you already knew. I just wondered how many other states, for example, had a similar system in place.
I can't give you an exact number. I know the trend throughout the country is to try to centralize a state medical examiner system because of the consistency it provides to criminal investigations. So I think we would simply be joining probably, I feel comfortable saying, the overwhelming trend that if a state does not already have a state medical examiner system, that it will be something that they'd be looking at like we are now in the future.
Madam Chair, can I make a comment?
Senator Abdallah.
Part of the reason for this bill, in my other life, 150 years ago, I was in the sheriff's office in Minnehaha County. We had a coroner then that was a funeral director. And I'm not saying all funeral directors were like this one, but this is very gruesome, but I literally was on the scene on highway accidents in one particular case where there were three fatalities. And the ambulance had loaded up two of them. The coroner showed up and took them out of the ambulance, put them in his ambulance for purposes of getting the funerals. And this would eliminate all that stuff.
Thank you. Further questions of the committee? Representative Schleckoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Swear, can you give us how the just a few concrete examples of what the $15,000 would go towards and how that number was derived, as the $15,000 figure was derived is for this study. How did you arrive at that figure?
I think what we did is there's no specific criteria that we looked at for $15,000. When we looked at the fact that we're probably going to have to look to a couple of our neighboring states and go see their medical examiner system, that we thought by the time you get the task force together multiple times, you decide if any states you're going to go see their medical examiner system. We thought that the $15,000 was probably a number that was extremely conservative, and that's kind of just where the number came from. I think it's going to end up costing the parties probably more than that by the time it's said and done, but we thought that was a solid conservative number.
Further questions of the committee? Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Senator Abdallah. You said that the Attorney General's office was going to pay a third, Minnehaha County was going to pay a third. That leaves a third that you didn't say where it was coming from.
Senator Abdallah?
I'm sorry if I didn't. The Association of County Commissioners is going to pay the other third.
Thank you.
Further questions of the committee? Seeing no further questions, we will close to committee questions and open to committee discussion or action on Senate Bill 74. Representative Turbeville.
Madam Chair, I would move to pass on Senate Bill 74.
Moved by Turbeville, seconded by Gibson. Remarks on that motion, Representative Turbeville.
Well, I can't believe that we spent 20 minutes discussing a study that could have been done without us even looking at the bill, but I agree with the sponsors, and I would urge the Attorney General to get on this as quickly as possible, even though it says shall. I see that we will be looking forward to a report on the 1st of November, but I agree. We've run into this problem in the area that I come from, Lawrence County. We have had everybody that is even remotely associated with this type of effort being in a medical examiner, and I do know that there's a desperate need out there. And even though South Dakota is not a heavy crime area, it is something that is necessary, and I think it will work well. There is no funding involved, which I would probably have voted to approve this bill, even with the $15,000. But as it is now, I would urge you to support the do pass motion on Senate Bill 74. Thank you.
Further remarks on the Turbeville motion do pass.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was
see you, but I recognize the voice.
That was 10 minutes of discussion by our Judicial Committee and 5 minutes of due pass by Representative Turbeville.
That would be out of order, Representative Hoffman. Further discussion on the Turbeville motion due pass on Senate Bill 74. Representative Lust.
Well, I would ask the committee to resist the do-pass motion. This really makes me uncomfortable. We as a legislature are not doing the study. We're compelling an executive branch agency to do a study, which they're going to do anyway. Talk about form over substance. This is a perfect example. If we defeat this, they're going to do it anyway. If we pass it, they're going to do it anyway. It doesn't involve the legislature in any way whatsoever. No funding. No one from the legislature serves on this study. It escapes me the purpose for this bill. I assume there was appropriation earlier and it's changed forms, but this is not a good use of our time to recommend or mandate a study that's going to be done anyway and not funded by us. It just, to me, it's unprecedented in my 2 years where we're compelling an executive branch agency to do a study. I've never seen that done before. But this doesn't accomplish anything that they're not going to do anyway. So I'm a little bit troubled that the legislative process is being used this way, and I would ask that you resist the motion to pass.
Further remarks on the Turbeville motion to pass. Representative Feinstein.
Only 6 words. Let's pass it and move on.
Further discussion. Is there any further discussion? If not, the motion is due pass on Senate Bill 74. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. And the secretary will please call the roll.
Representative Ingalls.
Aye.
Feinstein?
Aye.
Gibson?
Aye.
Gosch?
Aye.
Hamill?
Aye.
Hoffman?
Aye.
Killer?
Aye.
Lust?
No.
Mosher?
No.
Schleckaway?
Aye.
Turbeville?
Aye.
Hunt?
Aye.
Cutler?
No.
Madam Chair, 10 ayes, 3 noes.
And Senate Bill 74 goes to the floor to pass. With that, we will move in the calendar to Senate Bill 131. Senate Bill 131, which is an act to authorize sheriffs to order autopsies. And we are open for proponent testimony on Senate Bill 131. Can you check your mic? Is it on?
I just got it on. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Jim Boland, representing District 16, all of Union County, essentially the southern half of Lincoln County. Senate Bill 131 is a bill that would add to the list of individuals who can ask for an autopsy the county sheriff. At the present time, as I've read the bill, we have listed the state's attorney and the county coroner, and this bill came to Senator Gillespie and myself from Sheriff Limoge, a longtime sheriff of Union County, and he believes that in case of a question in regards to the cause of death or any suspicion involved, that he should have the authority, along with the state's attorney and the county coroner, to ask for an autopsy. So I believe this is a very simple bill and a positive one. We would urge its adoption. Thank you very much. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 131. Good morning, Senator Gillespie.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Margaret Gillespie, Senator, District 16. Apologize, I was next door in your counterpart, Senate Judiciary Committee. Madam Chair, Sheriff Dan Limoge did contact me before session and indicated perhaps that the legislature should consider allowing sheriffs to order autopsies. I'll try not to plow new ground here. You know, when you think about the circumstances of an unlawful death where an autopsy is considered either by currently under current law by a state's attorney or a coroner, really the sheriff is the individual that's usually on the first on the scene under those unlawful death circumstances. And so we think that it just makes sense that the sheriff ought to be able to order that autopsy. As you look at the bill, Section 1 is provides for the amendment in the law enforcement title, and then Section 2 and 3, if you will, Madam Chair, provides for the amendment under custody and disposition of bodies. And I would be next door if there are any questions, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gillespie. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 131.
Good morning, Chairman Cutler, committee member Stacey Eggert, South Dakota Sheriff's Association. I have good news. Because you heard Senate Bill 74 prior to 131, a lot of the things we wanted to say were covered in that. When the bill was brought up, I did do some research among our counties to find out what backgrounds most of the coroners had. And as Senator Abdallah alluded to, most of them have some sort of medical background, all the way from a physician down to an EMT. But we do have auto mechanics, farmers, and other occupations that are not related in any sort of way to the medical field. And as far as the person in the county who has the training in criminal investigations, that would be your local law enforcement. And we have worked with all these different individuals, and I believe they all support us in this, and there'll be other proponents wishing to testify to confirm that. So,
thank you. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 131. Seeing none, is there any opponent testimony? Seeing none, we'll close to proponent and opponent testimony and open to questions of the committee. Representative Hamill.
I was going to ask this question of Senator Gillespie, but there may be someone else who can address it. I'm interested in, from a historical perspective, why the sheriff wasn't included on the list of those who could order an autopsy, since it does seem logical that he or she would be a person in a good position to ask for such an order. So is there anybody who can tell us why the sheriffs have been excluded?
Since there isn't, Representative Hamill, would you like us to have a page look at Senator Gillespie?
That might be appropriate. Thank you.
Okay. And while he's doing that, is there another question of the committee? Representative Gosch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Ms. Eggers. Eggert. Sorry. Yes. Thanks to my colleague. I finally got your name right. Apologize. What is the cost of an autopsy?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Eggert.
I don't have a concrete number, but it runs around $4,000.
Follow up? Has there been a problem with a sheriff who wants to have an autopsy done but has been unsuccessful in getting either the coroner or the state's attorney to agree to ask for one?
Ms. Hager.
In a majority of the cases, no, but we have had one instance where he was unable to convince them to do so.
Any further questions? Yes. Representative Gosch, we will go back to Representative Hamill's question since Senator Gillespie is in the room. Thank you for coming back, Senator Gillespie.
Madam Chair, Senator Gillespie, I was interested from a historical perspective, and I hope you can answer this, why the sheriffs would have been excluded from those who could have asked for an autopsy. It seems so logical. Do you have any idea why historically that was the case?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gillespie.
I do not, Senator, but it's a very good question, and I think that perhaps a logical change in the statute is just the advances in investigations that we've had, and the absolute direct involvement of the sheriff in those investigations in terms of taking this in a new direction. But I can't answer that question. But Madam Chair, I would like to respond to the other question that was also brought forward.
Senator
by
Gillespie, Senator, go ahead.
Senator Gosch, I cannot enumerate the factual circumstance under which the sheriff in my county had an issue, but there was a problem. And I can tell you that it involved a death in Union County that then the local hospital is actually in Iowa. And I don't know what the factual circumstances were, but I think there was a problem. And then the other issue is, and I didn't want to bring this out because I certainly don't want to call into question the quality of coroners that we have in South Dakota, but the reality is you can be a coroner without having any medical training at all. If your coroner, pick your set of circumstances, but if one or the other is absent, and the reality with the sheriff being on the scene, I think in the immediacy of that, it only makes sense that we allow the sheriff to order that autopsy. And then the other issue to consider is what if there is a conflict? Do we want to bury someone? And if there is a conflict and perhaps some unsavory tactics taking place where an autopsy wasn't ordered and there was a conflict of interest of some sort, and we bury the person, and then we have to disinter that body to get the autopsy, and hopefully it's under circumstances that don't prevent a prosecution if there is an unlawful means and ultimately a death that was done by unlawful means.
Follow up, Representative Gosch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You raise a good point about the county coroners. I'm just wondering also, generally, without any required medical training, do they also not have any required investigatory training?
That would Madam Chair.
Senator Gillespie.
That would certainly be my understanding. I don't have that statute in front of me, but that's my understanding, sir.
Further questions of the committee? Representative Lust.
I think this question for Ms. Eggers. Thank you. You indicated that the cost is roughly $4,000 for an autopsy. What from whose budget does that come?
We actually had this discussion when the bill was brought to us, and we didn't come up with any concrete answer whether it came out of the sheriff's budget or the county coroner budget. But what was pointed out in the discussion was that we wouldn't have sheriffs unduly authorizing autopsies, because you will have the results of those autopsies available to you. And if a county commission were to have a sheriff who was ordering unnecessary autopsies and they had to pay for those expenditures, they're the ones who have to approve his or her budget. And we feel that the balance would come by the county commission in having to argue their budgets for the future.
Further questions of the committee? Representative Mosher, did you have a question?
That was my question.
Oh, he beat you to it. Further questions of the committee? Seeing no further questions, we'll close to committee questions and open to committee discussion and or action on Senate Bill 131. Representative Mosher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Move do pass.
Second. Moved by Mosher, seconded by Gosch. Remarks on that motion, Representative Mosher?
Just briefly, it doesn't make logical sense to me that the sheriff wouldn't have the ability to order an autopsy, so I would urge support.
Further remarks on the Mosher motion do pass for Senate Bill 131. Representative Ingalls.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of years from now, we may not even have coroners anymore if we have a statewide medical examiner system, so I think we're dealing with a body of law that's in the middle of a change. But I think one of the things we're probably going to want to keep is the ability of a sheriff to order an autopsy, and I think this is a good change.
Further discussion? Representative Gosch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, initially I wasn't sure if I was going to support this just because I didn't know if there was going to be a need stated for it or if there was a real problem. We've had this law on the book for a number of years, and there didn't seem to be a problem. But with the testimony today, if a county coroner has that authority, I think certainly the sheriff should have that authority as well. And so I would urge your support of this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion? The motion is do pass on Senate Bill 131. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The secretary will please call the roll.
Representative Ingalls.
Aye.
Feinstein.
Aye.
Gibson.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hamel.
Aye.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Killer.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Mosher.
Aye.
Schleckaway.
Aye.
Turbeville.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Cutler.
Aye.
Madam Chair, 13 ayes.
And Senate Bill 131 goes to the floor. Do pass. Thank you, Senator Gillespie. Representative Hoffman.
If you would be so inclined, I would move do a consent on this bill, ma'am.
Moved by Hoffman, seconded by Gibson. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That bill will go to the consent calendar. Senate Bill 186. We are now open for proponent testimony on Senate Bill 186, which is an act to provide for the imposition of a late payment fee for certain chronically delinquent child support obligations. Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Russell Olson, District 8, Senator from Moody County, Lake County, Minor, and Sanborn Counties. Madam Chair, I have an amendment that's being circulated by the pages. Is it all right if I speak to the bill and the amendment?
Certainly.
Thank you very much. Do I also understand that this is the last bill that the House Judiciary Committee will hear in this session?
That is not exactly the case.
Well, for today, let's hope we end on a positive note then.
Well, that's not even necessarily the case. We which is no, I should explain, Senator. We actually are going to take up a matter after your bill, even though yours, yes, is the last on the calendar. So.
Very well. Members of the committee, this bill comes to you today as a constituent issue, and I would say that it isn't a constituent issue for me or my district alone. I would say with great confidence that it's a constituent issue for everyone on the committee and that serves in this body. If you work at Trail King or Eager Steel or Crimson Fire Apparatus or Coburg Manufacturing or Dakota Firearm Manufacturing, and you have a custody order of support for your children, and you're an hourly employee, those funds are automatically taken out of your wages by your employer. If you're self-employed as the non-custodial parent, we don't have a state law that actually goes in and garnishes those wages automatically. There's a court order that you pay on either the 1st or the 15th or whatever date the court has deemed appropriate, but there isn't a mechanism in state law that actually goes in and takes those funds from your pay. So I want to make it clear that I'm not bringing this legislation to try to beat up on deadbeat dads that really don't have the means to pay. What this bill is intended to do is to go after those non-custodial parents that have the ability to pay but choose not to. They choose to make a boat payment or to go on a trip or to do other things that other than take care of their children when they have the ability to pay. There's safeguards in this legislation that protect the obligor, and I think that I've said it in both Senate Judiciary and on the Senate floor. This bill has the opportunity to be alive today because instead of being lawyered to death, it was lawyered to life. And I've got a lot of good input from a lot of attorneys to make this a workable bill. Currently in South Dakota, their DSS informs me that there are 31,000 orders of support, and 6,000 of those are late each month on an average. So, and not saying that this bill is going to have 6,000 people that are going to be eligible for the fine. Actually, this bill with the amendment would actually say that they'd have to be late for 3 months in a row, at least 10 days late, to trigger this. So out of a 12-year calendar, they have to be 10 days or more late each month to trigger this. And it's a 10% of the ordered amount or $50, whichever is greater. The burden of proof, like I said earlier, is on the obligor to say that they don't have the ability to pay. If they simply are having hard times, and everyone knows that if, you know, a non-custodial parent that's self-employed could be a farmer, could be a chiropractor, could be an attorney or a doctor, and there are some financial concerns that would slow that person down and prohibit them from making payment. We're not going after those. It's the people that are gaming the system. And I just want to use a couple examples from constituents that have spoken to me about this. And it isn't just some poor old mother that the dad has left and chooses not to pay. It's also, you know, men that are the custodial parent and have a professional spouse that's self-employed. And one example is a man that has custody of his three children, and his former spouse is a CPA. Well, she knows that it's going to be about 88 days before the Department of Social Services can catch up with her on her late support, and then she can make a token amount to the amount owed, and then it keeps her from having to go to court. Another case that is right in my hometown is a construction worker that was a general contractor, and he's self-employed, and this guy is 3-4 months behind all the time, and shows up at the custodial parent's house on Saturday afternoon to pick up the kids for his weekend with his brand new race car that he sponsored in an enclosed trailer, and certainly putting priorities not on his family, but on himself. And so what we're trying to do here is to give a mechanism that would allow that custodial parent to not be used as a line of credit anymore. If you're one day late with your credit card payment, you'll receive a fine of $30. It goes on automatically. You know, you can go through, there's a process, I'm sure, to appeal that if you were late. But either way, it triggers an automatic fine. If you're driving in South Dakota on any highway and you're 3 miles an hour over, it's $70. You don't get to get pulled over three times like this bill would basically allow for that custodial or non-custodial parent. You're getting a $70 ticket. As I said before, this bill gives a vehicle of hope for some of these custodial parents that are currently being used as a line of credit. I would urge your favorable support. There are other proponents that are going to speak on behalf of the bill and the amendment, and I will stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 186.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Terry Walter, I'm the Division Director for the South Dakota Division of Child Support. We support this bill with the amendment. I think it gives custodial parents an avenue to enforce the timely payment of their child support, and hopefully will be better for the children when those payments are made in a timely manner. I'd urge your support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 186.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Judith Roberts. I'm legal and legislative counsel for the UJS. The UJS is in support of Senate Bill 186 only as amended if the amendment is adopted. So I know that it is not open for discussion yet, but I'd be willing to address that if the committee would like me to.
Thank you. We'll get to that when we get to questions. If there are further proponents on Senate Bill 186? No further proponents. Are there any opponents to Senate Bill 186? Seeing none, we'll close to proponent and opponent testimony and open to questions of the committee. Representative Gosch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Ms. Roberts. Could you please walk through the amendment and tell us what it does?
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Now's the time.
Representative Gosch, yes. With this amendment, if you get my number.
Is your mic on?
I think so. I'm one of the people that are losing my voice as well. Sorry. I apologize.
Representative Gosch.
That might be my fault. I sat next to her a couple days ago on committee, and I may have passed on to her what I had.
I'm going to blame you, yes. Well, if we look at the amendment on page 1, line 7, you'll see that we're deleting the word 5 and we're inserting 10. The reason why we felt this is necessary was because many payments are sent by the obligor to DSS or the clerk of courts. And 5 days, we felt we didn't want it to be the fault or responsibility of the clerk in case the mail comes, they have to open it, they have to enter it, they have to do the bookkeeping, and then they have to reseal it and send it. And if there's some sort of delay, it wasn't clear whether or not it's the clerk of court or DSS receiving it in 5 days late, or if it was the obligor or obligee that got the check within 10 or 5 days. So we thought that 10 was a more realistic, just to ensure that it was not because of some delay with mail or DSS or the clerk of courts. We feel that that would be a little bit safer there. Also, if you look, the major amendment would be page 2, line 6, and we're deleting everything after payment, and we're inserting the amendment there. Why we needed this amendment was simply because of the process that is in place and due process for both sides. What we're planning on doing is we are going to be drafting pro se forms and putting them on the website so that people can, pro se is when you don't have an attorney and you can do this yourself. And we will provide these forms for both sides. One would be the petition asking for this $50 fee or 10% fee, and also for the other side to object if they don't feel that this is warranted. So we changed the language to include that when the person can download that petition, and then they file the petition, and then they also have to serve the other side to let them know that this is happening. Just a simple due process safeguard. They are then they have to give the court proof that that person was served. And then after they have been served, that obligor has 10 days in which to object, and they can again use those pro se forms that we will put on the UJS website to object. If they don't object, the court will just sign an order and determine what is necessary. If they do object, the court will hold a hearing as soon as possible or as soon as practical, and then the burden has the ability the obligor has the burden on showing why they have been late or they have not been paying. And then based on the evidence at that hearing, the court will order whatever they see as warranted in the situation. So basically, that's the amendment in a nutshell.
Further questions of the committee? Follow-up, Representative Gosch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you also describe the protections in this bill? Are the indications that were alluded to earlier that this is targeting those who have the ability to pay but aren't just not diligent in making the payments timely? They're making other things in their life a priority instead of their support payments.
Madam Chair,
Ms.
Representative Gosch, that would all come out within the petition. As a system, we don't have anything to know the motives behind why a petition is being filed. We can only go on what is on the petition, and then if there's an objection filed to that, and then the court settles it within a hearing and allows both people to speak as to why they're late or what their lifestyle is. That would all come out in a hearing or on the petition. The example that was used, that the person is late but picks up the child with a new race car or whatever, that would be provided. There would be sections on that petition to provide for those types of examples.
Further questions of the committee? Representative Feinstein.
Madam Chair, thank you for Ms. Roberts. Can you go through a little bit of the timeline and probably more specifically, an obligor would have 10 days to file or to state an objection. Can you explain how that is done and then what happens then? How long, and I guess I'm going in terms of, okay, he puts this pro se objection in with the clerk of courts, and then what happens?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Roberts.
Basically what would happen, now it's 10 days from service, so it's not 10 days from that petition being filed, you understand?
Right.
Okay. So that person would then either hire an attorney or download, if they wanted to do it themselves, the form, and they have 10 days to file that with the clerk of court. And then the clerk of court would then check the calendar and set a hearing, because then it would come before the court for a hearing. I can't give you a timeline as far as when they would get on. We are needing a couple new judges. That might hurry things up a little bit there.
Follow-up, Representative Feinstein.
I guess where I'm going with this a little bit is, I mean, are we talking maybe a month down the road before this is heard before a judge, 2 months, 5 days? I mean, and just for those that aren't familiar with the system, and we still have a party out there that is aggrieved because they don't have the child support. I mean, what's the finality here?
Ms. Roberts.
What would happen is the judge, yes, it might be a little bit of a delay. We try and get, and the bill says as soon as practical, which would mean that probably the first opening that there is on the calendar. But then the judge also has the ability to look back and to see how many months and what the trend is, and we put into the bill that the court may order the obligor to pay a late fee or may order any other relief as it deems appropriate. So we put that safeguard in there in case it wasn't just one time, and while we're waiting to get to court, it happens again and again, that evidence would be able to be presented in court, and the court could order any other relief that would be appropriate in the circumstance.
Thank you.
Further questions of the committee?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hunt.
I have a question or two for Mr. Walters from Department of Social Services. Thank you, Madam Chair. We've heard reference to situations of where the failure to pay isn't reasonable because the individual is spending money on his own race cars and so on and so forth. But let me take you to the situation of where we have the obligors in the penitentiary. Now, would you comment on what happens as far as an obligor being in the penitentiary is concerned? And I'm thinking of the fact that one of the things that we did recently on the Child Support Guidelines Commission was to recognize that those individuals obviously have very little access to money. And so we amended the law, or we recommend the amendment of the law so that they didn't get out of prison with this enormous bill, which is kind of self-defeating. They have no real encouragement to go out and get a job because they owe thousands of dollars, et cetera. Now we may be looking at additional penalties in that type of a situation, albeit the court can obviously say no late penalty under those circumstances. I'm sorry for the long introduction, but what I'd like to hear from is the Department of Social Services policies relative to incarcerated individuals. And is the department going to be having to increase its workload where it is collecting the payments and then suddenly someone goes out and is no longer under your auspices? Could you just comment in that general area? I'm sorry, Madam Chair, for all of that, but I feel there's an area here that involves DSS, and I'm wondering what the additional workload is going to be as far as DSS is concerned, and I'm wondering how we're going to handle those things, for example, with incarcerated members.
Mr. Walter.
Representative Hunt, with regard to the incarcerated individuals, I believe the bill does provide protection in those circumstances where the non-custodial parent does not have the ability to pay. And so basically in those circumstances where the non-custodial parent may be incarcerated, he has no ability to pay because he has no income source, has no opportunity to earn income. And so the late payment fee in those circumstances, in my opinion, would not apply under the bill. And as far as the Department of Social Services and the workload that this bill may impact upon our department, it essentially would have no impact on the department because these are actions that would be brought pro se by the individual party that is not receiving their timely support. So if the department were required to do so, it would take a considerable amount of additional funding, not only for our computer system programming, but for the additional staffing time associated with the imposition of such a late payment fee.
Madam Chair, just one quick follow-up.
Well, certainly. It's an important area, Representative Hunt. It's certainly worth our time this morning.
Since there's a requirement under the bill to provide information about late payments and when they were made and how much and so on and so forth, is that information that the department would have to provide? And in that way, would that increase the department's workload?
Mr. Walter.
Currently, we have an automated system. We have an internet website. We have an automated telephone system where either party can call and obtain payment information, what the date of the payment was made, when it was dispersed to them, and so forth, and the balances owed on the case. So And we, on a routine basis, do provide hard copy printouts of payment screen information for custodial, non-custodial parents. So in my opinion, it would not substantially, it would be insignificant as far as additional workload on the department for those purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Walters. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Further questions of the committee? Seeing no further questions of the committee, we will close to committee questions and open to committee discussion and or action on Senate Bill 186. Madam Chair. Representative Gosch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move Amendment 186-TA.
Moved by Gosch, seconded by Gibson. Remarks on that motion, Representative Gosch.
I think Ms. Roberts from UJS did a good job describing the amendment. I would just add, I think that with additional due process makes it a better bill. I would suggest we adopt this amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there further discussion on the Gosch motion to amend? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion carries, and we are back to Senate Bill 186 as amended. Representative Gosch.
I would move do pass Senate Bill 186.
As amended.
As amended, yes, ma'am.
Moved by Gosch, seconded by Gibson. Remarks. Representative Gosch.
Well, I think as the testimony indicated, there are late payments built into our system that we live by now. This is a very friendly late payment system, but a needed one, I think, for those who have the ability to pay but don't make it a priority to make their child support payments. There are additional steps that have to be taken to assure safeguards and procedural due process, steps that our creditors don't have to take when they throw the $39 late fee on our credit card statements. But with that, I would urge your support of this bill. Thank you.
Further remarks? Seeing nothing further of the committee, the motion is do pass Senate Bill 186 as amended. The secretary will please take the roll, and those in favor will say aye, and those opposed, no.
Representative Ingalls.
Aye.
Feinstein.
Aye.
Gibson.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hamill.
Aye.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Killer.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Mosier.
Aye.
Schleckaway.
Aye.
Turbeville.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Cutler.
Aye.
Madam Chair, 13 ayes.
Thank you. And Senate Bill 186 goes to the floor. Do pass as amended. Thank you. Committee, we have one bit of business left here today, and I am going to request, could I have your attention, please? I am going to request that we take Senate Bill 78 off the table. So I'm moving Senate Bill 78 off the table.
I'll second that motion, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hunt. We want to take Senate Bill 78 off the table today for Hog House Amendment, and I'll let the proponent of the amendment come and speak to you about it. I'll also ask the pages to distribute that at this time. We will need a majority vote of the members to take Senate Bill 78 off the table. With that, I'll ask the secretary to please call the roll.
Representative Ingalls?
Aye.
Feinstein?
Aye.
Gibson?
Aye.
Gosch?
Aye.
Hamill?
Aye.
Hoffman?
Aye.
Killer?
Aye.
Lust?
Aye.
Mosier?
Aye.
Schleckaway?
Aye.
Turbeville?
Aye.
Hunt?
Aye.
Cutler?
Aye.
Madam Chair, 13 ayes.
And Senate Bill 78 comes off the table. And with that, have you seen the amendment? Okay, thank you. With that, I'll ask Representative Hunhoff to explain what we're doing here with the Amendment 78-OB.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. And I'll be very brief, and then if you have questions, you can ask them later, and I'll be happy to respond. But this is an effort. Bernie Hunhoff, I'm District 18. And I think a lot of us have seen through our public lives that we continue to build prison space, and that's been a needed thing. But I think we've also probably all wondered about whether there aren't better ways to treat some nonviolent offenders. And those discussions just haven't happened very often, at least to my knowledge, in this legislature. Other states are doing some pretty exciting and cost-saving steps, especially in relation to drug courts and other alternative sentencing ideas. You might remember that we had this discussion with the West River prison bill on the House floor a few days ago, and the effort was inadvertently lost, you might say, on the floor. This is really much the same amendment with some compromise language written by, I think, the UJS and the governor's office, and I don't want to speak for them, but I think all the parties that would be involved are on board. The corrections department likes this. The UJS likes it. The governor's office supports it. And it's really just an effort to in the next legislative session, to really bring a plan so that we can really get our hands around and talk about how we might really, find some ways to save budgets, save dollars. I just came from budget projections. We need to save dollars. And also, I think it could actually result in better ways of sentencing some of these nonviolent offenders. So with that, I'll be very brief and be happy to answer questions if there are some.
Thank you. With the amendment before us, we'll ask for proponent testimony for the amendment to Senate Bill 78. Is there further proponent testimony? Is your mic on?
I'm sorry.
We need to turn up the volume on that mic.
Start over.
I'm having trouble hearing everybody.
Representative Cutler, members of the committee, I'm Lori Filer with the Department of Corrections. We rise in support of this. I just took a quick look at some numbers this morning, and about 18% of our prison population is doing time for a drug offense. We support safe alternatives to incarceration as an alternative. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 78th Amendment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Judith Roberts. I'm legal and legislative counsel to the UJS. The UJS is in support of Senate Bill 78 with the amendment OB. And I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 78's amendment. Seeing none, we'll close to proponent testimony. Is there any opponent testimony? In case it happens, how people say it. Seeing none, just by matter of process, committee, because I know we don't often do hog house amendments here or bring things from the table. So what we're doing is wanted you to have an explanation of the adoption of this amendment as a hog house. And when we get to it, that will be the vote. After it's hog house, then it properly should be calendared, since it's now a different bill than it was. So we will calendar it for Monday, and that's when we would be voting on passage of it, so that everyone has notice of what Senate Bill 78 is now becoming, and can come back to the committee should there be any further discussion for Senate Bill 78 and its amendment. With that, are there questions of the committee? I have one question for Ms. Roberts. The amendment assumes that there will be a UJS study, and I just wondered if you could address that and let us know when the study would begin or would be done. Since the amendment is dependent upon the actual study done by the UJS.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, the UJS is committed, and the Chief Justice is highly committed in this area of exploring alternative sentencing options, which is what drug courts are, whether you use the name drug court or something else, to be able to use community-based services or whatnot, and that's what the study will determine what is successful and what isn't. Or if you use the example of the Fourth Circuit Drug Court, which has been very successful, he is very committed in exploring and studying alternative sentencing options. We are, the study will begin immediately upon passage, or we will begin the process of setting up how the study is going to be conducted, because as this amendment says, that we need to have it ready by 2010 legislative session. So it will be we will undertake that as soon as the legislative session is completed.
Thank you. Are there any further questions of the committee? Seeing no further questions of the committee, Representative Hunt.
I have a question of Representative Hunhoff. And, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
I apologize for interrupting the sidebar.
No, I apologize, sir.
I'm wondering if you would consider it as a friendly amendment to what you have proposed as an amendment, to be a little more exact as to when this report gets presented to the legislature. And what I would possibly propose subsequently, or someone could propose, is the deletion of 2010, and after the word legislature, prior to December 1, 2009. And what this would do would be to require this action to be, at least the study and whatnot, the information to be made available to the legislature well enough in advance of the next legislative session that it could be properly considered, et cetera. Would you view that as a friendly?
I would. I wouldn't want to speak for the UJS.
Probably should have the UJS then speak for the UJS. I assume you'd want Ms. Roberts to comment
yes.
on that, Representative Hunt.
She was the next
sure.
question.
Representative Hunt, that could be problematic for us to get a complete and thorough study done and in a form to present. I mean, we will attempt to do our best, but to be mandated to have it done by September.
December.
Oh, December.
December 1.
We will certainly attempt, but I'm not sure, since this is just something that is, we're just beginning, we don't have it yet, all the details worked out. We hesitate to, we don't like mandates as a separate branch of government, but we are fully committed, and the Chief Justice is fully committed to start this immediately and to have it ready to you as soon as we can complete it. I guess that
Madam
would be
Chair,
my
just
answer.
Just a quick
sure,
follow-up.
Go ahead, Representative.
This is language that we've used in when we have similar reports, and the difficulty, as you recognize, if you could present it to the 2010 legislature on the 38th legislative day, theoretically. So I'd just like to pin it down a little bit so that if we're going to have to act on this in 2011 for possible implementation in 2011, I'm just trying to pin the date down.
Madam Chair,
go
Representative
ahead.
Hunt, I could just very respectfully ask you to trust us and we are committed and we will provide you with what you need in a timely manner. We are committed to this and we will get you what you need.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and we do have that on record, Representative Hunt.
We
further questions of the committee concerning 78OB motion or amendment, excuse me. Seeing no further questions, then we'll close to that and open to committee action.
Madam Chair?
Representative Hunt.
I don't believe we've had a motion yet to adopt this amendment. Therefore, I would make that motion that we adopt Amendment 78OB.
Second.
Moved by Hunt, seconded by Gibson. Remarks, Representative Hunt.
I think we've had good dialogue on it and as to the reason and what we're doing. I just encourage your vote on this amendment to Senate Bill 78.
It has been moved by Representative Hunt. The amendment is 78OB. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Senate Bill 78 is so amended. And with that, yes, we do have the title amendment. If someone would please move the title amendment. Moved by Turbeville, seconded by Mosier. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? The title is so amended. With that committee, we will then calendar Senate Bill 78 as it now exists in its amended form for further discussion or action on Monday. With that, we have concluded our work this morning, and I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Turbeville, seconded by Gibson. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? We are adjourned.